And we're holding on Kuf Yud Aleph on the days right after the Mishnah. We had a long Mishnah, and the Mishnayos, it's actually in the printed Mishnayos, it's actually several different Mishnayos, but anyway, that dealt with the dinim of the Irani Dachas. One thing we learned in the Mishnah is that in order for it to be an Irani Dachas, the Madichim, the people who convinced them to worship Avodah Zarah, have to meet several criteria. We said they have to be men from that city, and not women or children. So the Gemara starts off analyzing that point. Turn it up bottom, we learn it in Braisa. The Pasuk goes like this. The Pasuk says, you find out that in Eretz Yisrael there's a city as follows. Yotzu anoshim b'nei b'lial mikir becha, the Pasuk says, wicked people, the Gemara will explain soon what b'lial means, have come out from among you, v'yadichu es yoshve iram, and they pushed away, they convinced the people of their city to worship Avodah Zarah. Lamer, they said to them, and the Pasuk continues, that they told them, let's go worship Avodah Zarah. So now the Braisa is going to darshan each of those phrases, Yotzu and Anoshim and Bnei Bliyal and Mikir Becha and so forth, and explain what dinim we learn from each of them. So Yotzu means Hein Velo Shluchim. The word Yotzu means that they themselves went out, not that they were Shluchim. Now, there's a good deal of discussion what that means. In other words, First of all, what it means, obviously, is in all those cases, if any of the criteria don't fit, then we don't judge the city as an Irani Dachas, means we judge it as individuals who worship at Avodah Zarah, whereas we established in the Mishnah, any time it's individuals, then they get skila, unlike Hereg, like an Irani Dachas, but on the other hand, their property is not destroyed like an Irani Dachas would be. But what do we mean exactly by, what exactly do we mean over here by Shluchim? On the face of it, shouldn't we, in that case, then the Shluchim themselves become the Madichim? So in other words, if Reuven and Shimon tell Levi and Yehuda, go convince the city to worship Avodah Zarah, well then it's going to be an Irani Dachas because of Levi and Yehuda themselves, no? So what's the difference? So there's a couple of possibilities. It can mean, for example, that Reuven and Shimon, instead of sending Levi and Yehuda, let's say, for example, they sent to Rachel and Leah. They sent women to make the announcement for them. Well, then we said in the Mishnah that it has to be men. So therefore, so over here, we would say that the men themselves didn't directly do the Hadachah. They did it, they had women do it for them, and therefore, that doesn't become an Irani Dachas, because women can't make it an Irani Dachas by convincing them. It can mean, for example, that the Shluchim go and say to the people, this isn't our own idea, we're only doing it, is Levi and Yehuda, let's say it is two men, but they're coming and saying we're doing it by, it was Reuven and Shimon who told us to go and make this announcement to you. There are a couple of different possibilities what it means over there, Hein Velo Shluchim.
Like coercion, you mean?
Not by coercion necessarily. It could even be that they're willing to, but they're like this. In other words, the classic hadacha would be that Reuven and Shimon themselves are coming and telling the people, come, I have a great idea, let's go worship Avodah Zarah. As opposed to over here, we would be saying that Levi and Yehuda come and start telling the people, you know, Reuven and Shimon gave us a great idea, we should go and worship Avodah Zarah. Well, then they can't, they're doing it only as shluchim, basically. There's a couple of different possibilities then that the Mephoshim bring up. The Aruch HaNer, in addition, points out what happened to the concept of En Shliach Ledvar Avera. You have a general rule that when it comes to doing an Avera, then a Shliach is considered that he does it on his own. It's not considered that he does it through the Meshaleach. So you have a few possibilities over here that the Mephoshim deal with, the Yad Ramah, the Rosh deal with a couple of these possibilities. Okay. Next, Anoshim, the Pasuk says men. Ein Anoshim, Pachos Midays, the word Anoshim is in the plural, so it means not less than two. So it has to be that there are at least two people who go and convince the city for them to become an Irani Dachas. Davar acha anoshim v'lo noshim. Another meaning of anoshim means as to exclude women. Anoshim v'lo ktanim, and also not ktanim. So the word anoshim teaches us that you need two, and that they have to be men. One point is, in other words, usually you have in the Torah, when it comes to matters of loisa, says, and when it comes to matters of punishments, usually men and women are equal. Here, for example, we're going to talk about when it comes to the people of the Irani Dachas, whether it's men or women, if they worship Avodah Zarah, they're getting executed and their property, and either way their property is being destroyed. So therefore we need to be told when it comes to those who are Madiachit, though, they have to be men. All right. Next, the Pasuk says, B'nei Blial, children of Blial, so it means wicked people. But what does the word Blial mean? Bonim Shapoku, El Shemayim Mitzavarehem, means children, means Jews, who've thrown off the yoke of Hashem from their necks. So Blial is Bli'ol. In other places also in the Torah, where it uses the word Blial, it has the same meaning. It means that they're lacking in the yoke of Hashem that should be on them. Next, Mikir Becha, when it says from within you, we learn from that, V'loy min asfar, it wouldn't apply if it's a border city. Now, we learned back in the first parak, we had a discussion about the point that a city on the border of Eretz Yisrael can't become an Irani Dachas, and we mentioned over there that Rav Shimon holds that the problem with that is because if a border city becomes an Irani Dachas, so now you're going to have, now the defenses of Eretz Yisrael will be weakened. Now you're going to have that there's a city on the border that was destroyed, the people in it were killed, and the city itself was destroyed. Now it'll be more possible for Goyim, for hostile Goyim from the surrounding areas to go and invade Eretz Yisrael. So here, on the other hand, so there, Reb Shimon had given a svara for it. Here the Gemara is bringing a pasuk for it. So it's one of those things where, it's one that we often find, as we're going to see in the Gemara later on. Reb Shimon is Dorish Taima Dekro. Reb Shimon tries to always find the reason behind the Pasuk and then derive details of the din from that. So therefore, over there, we'd be talking according to Reb Shimon, whereas here the Gemara is just saying that the fact is the Pasuk says it, and then we can see what reasons we can find, what Reb Shimon would say then. Let's see what reasons we can find, but the din would be the din either way. So in other words, according to the Chachamim, it's Xeris HaKosuv, and according to the Chachamim, it's Xeris HaKosuv. And according to Reb Shimon, there's a reason, and according to Reb Shimon, there's a reason behind it. So we learned that from the word Mikir Becha. Next, the pasuk says, Yoshve Iram, the inhabitants of their city. That means, V'lo Yoshve Ir Acheres, not the inhabitants of a different city, which leads us to the din that we said in the Mishnah, that if the Madichim are from a different city, then the city doesn't become an Irani Dachas. Next, the pasuk says lemer, to say. That means shetzurchen edim v'asra l'chol echad v'echad. We need edim and asra for everyone, as we learned about yesterday, that every person in the town who worshipped Avodah Zarah, there needs to be edim that he worshipped, and there needs to be hasra that he was warned not to do it. It means the madichim themselves also need edim v'asra. And we learn all that from the word lemer. In other words, we shouldn't think, given that we're treating this case differently than every other one, we're judging the city as a unit. We're giving them a different punishment than would usually be for an Irani, than would usually be for Avodah Zarah. Maybe you shouldn't need the regular Edom Asra. No, the word lemer means that you need the same kind of saying as you do in every other case. So that's how the Braisa darshans several words in the pasuk over here, and that brings us to a number of the dinim that we said in the Mishnah. Okay. The Gemara says now Itmar. So now we have a discussion on the question of which this discussion is going to lead us back to our Mishnah. The Gemara is going to use our Mishnah as a proof for it. So Gemara says Itmar. Rabbi Yochanan Omar Chokin Ir Achas L'Shnei Shvatim. Rabbi Yochanan says one city can be divided between two Shvatim. Meaning, in other words, to begin with, Rashi explains when they first entered Eretz Yisrael and conquered it, and then they divided up Eretz Yisrael among the Shvatim, and they made a goyel for each one. So you could have, conceivably, says Rabbi Yochanan, that one city could be partially in one Shevet's territory and the other in the other. So you would have, let's say, in other words, Rashi explains, we learned in Bava Basra, the way they made the division of Eretz Yisrael was they had a girdle, they had one box full of slips of paper that listed the different regions of Eretz Yisrael, and then they had a different one that had the names of the Shvatim, and they would go there, or Vatumim would announce which Shevet is going to be drawn next, and then they would draw that Shevet, and they would draw the part of land with it. So now, supposing that region of the country has a city exactly on the border with the next region. So then, Rabbi Yochanan is saying, that's fine, the city can belong half to one Shevet and half to another. Whereas Rish Lakish says that you can't, the city has to, whichever one you would find out in which region is most of the city located, and then you would give it to that Shevet. So now, Yerushalayim is a special case. We do have Yerushalayim, it says, in a number of places in Shas, was divided between Yehuda and Binyamin, but that's a special case. But other than that, can you do that with other cities in Eretz Yisrael? That's where you have the Machlokas. Rashi, again, Rashi is saying that this is that the Machlokas is referring to when they first divided up Eretz Yisrael in the times of Yeshua. The Yad Ramah explains that it actually has to do with La'osit Lavoi, when Mashiach comes, and we redivide Eretz Yisrael among the 12 Shvatim, plus one strip for the Nasi, so you can have the same kind of thing. If you're measuring out the strips over there, as Yechezkel describes, you're going to have a bunch of strips of land, each the same width. So what do you have if the strip, what do you do if the border of the, if the border of a strip passes through a city? So according to Rabbi Yochanan, that's fine. You give part of the city to each Shevet, and according to the Shlokish, you don't. So the Gemara says, Eisvei Rabbi Yochanan l'Rish Lakish. So Rabbi Yochanan says to Rish Lakish, I have a contradiction. You're telling me that a city always has to belong to one Shevet or another, with the exception of Yerushalayim, fine, but we also learned previously in the beginning of the Masechta that Yerushalayim can never become an Ir Nidachas. So therefore, so if you're talking about any other city in Eretz Yisrael, well, we said in our Mishnah, Ad Shiyu Madichel Ma'oser Ir Umay Oser Shevet. We said in order for it to be an Ir Nidachas, the people who convinced them to worship Avodah Zarah have to be from the same city and from the same Shevet. Now, why does that have to mention both those things? If according to you, being from a certain city always means being from a certain Shevet, so then my love, Afakav de Madichel Ma'oser, wouldn't that mean that even if the Madichim are from the same city, it still doesn't work to become an Ir Nidachas? I Ika Ma'oser Shevet Ein Iloy Loy, only if they're an addition from the same Shevet, then yes, and if not, then not. Shema Mino Chokim Irachas Abeis Shvatim. And that would show that one city could be divided among two Shvatim. Otherwise, it should be enough to say that they have to be from the same city, and automatically, that would mean that they're from the same Shevet. And the answer is loy, not necessarily. Your Shlokish can say that it means that. You could say, first of all, you could have that one, a person could yarshin a city in a different territory, in a territory from a different Shevet. Say, for example, you know, you have a husband marries a wife from a different Shevet, and eventually the wife passes away, and her son's yarshin her, as we learned about extensively in Baba Basra. So he yarshin through his mother. His mother was like Benoist Fluffhut. She inherited property from her father, and in turn her son, who's from a different Shevet than her father was, ends up with that territory. So in other words, that's the point. So you could have, so the city to begin with, let's say, was given entirely to Shevet Zvulun, let's say, but now you have, meanwhile, a person from Shevet, you know, a woman from Shevet Zvulun who owned a piece of land in that city. She married a man from Shevet Osher, let's say, and her child, also from Shevet Osher, yarshins it. So now you have a person from Shevet Osher who owns territory in Shevet Zvulun. That doesn't mean that to begin with the city was divided among Osher and Zvulun, which are neighboring Shvatim. It means rather that he inherited later on. Inami diyava nilei matano. For that matter, you could have a person from Shevet Zvulun could give a present of land to in Shevet Osher to somebody else, and the same thing. Therefore, you could have somebody from that Shevet living over there. So no proof one way or the other. All right. Rabbi Yochanan says to the Shlokish, I have another question. Esve says, I have another question on you. In Sefer Yoshua, it describes how, so after they finished dividing up the territories among all the Shvatim, now the Levim had to be given their cities. You have the six main Arei Miklat, and you have another 42 cities that the Levim got. We'll learn in a few days in Makkos, that's the Shem. We'll talk about why they're divided into separate groups of 6 and 42, but in any case, they ended up giving the Levim 48 cities. Most Shvatim gave 4 cities each, a couple of Shvatim, there were exceptions. So the Pasuk describes how they gave cities from Shevet Yehuda and Shimon together, and the expression in the Pasuk is, Odim Tesha Me'esh Shnei HaShvatim Ha'Ela. There were nine cities given from these two Shvatim. Now, what do you mean nine from two Shvatim? My love, Ivo Palgamahai, the Ivo Palgamahai. Doesn't that mean, Bepashtus, Yehuda gave 4, Shimon gave 4, and then they gave one city, which was jointly owned by Yehuda and Shimon. So therefore, Shema Minachok and Irachas Abeis Shvatim. So that would show that one city could be divided to begin with among two Shvatim. And the answer is loin. Avraham Mehai, Vachomesh Mehai. No, it means that one of those two Shvatim gave 4 and the other one gave 5, and it doesn't specify which is which. Well, the Gemara says, Yichalchi Lifrish Perushi. Well, then why does it do that? Why does it lump them together and say nine from the two Shvatim? Mela, if it meant that you could divide a city into two Shvatim, then that's the Chiddush the Pasuk is telling you. But, and therefore, in other words, the Pasuk didn't want to spell out and say four and a half cities from this and four and a half cities from that. But if you're saying it's four and five, then why not say Yehuda gave this city and this city and this city and this city and this city, total five, and Shimon gave this, 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 and this, total four. So Lifrish Purushi, it should specify. What is Kasha? You're right. That's a Kasha on Rish Lakish. It's not a Tziufta. We haven't shlugged him up. The Ran explains, because after all, Shimon and Yehuda are a special case. Shevet Shimon got their territory entirely within Shevet Yehuda. What happened was they gave Yehuda the southern portion of Eretz Yisrael. Now you have, first of all, Shimon had been told by Yaakov hundreds of years earlier, Achalkin be Yaakov, they're going to be divided up among the Jewish people. So they didn't get one contiguous territory like the other Shvatim. Instead, they were going to get a scattered territory. And they gave them from within Shevet Yehuda because the area that they'd given to Shevet Yehuda was much larger than they needed, Mefarshim explained. So therefore, the idea was it was given to Shimon. It was actually meant to be a temporary thing. Actually, in Divrei Yomim, it mentions that eventually, in the times of David HaMelech, Yehuda did need that territory. By that time, Shevet Yehuda had grown tremendously to the point where they needed all that extra land, and therefore they had to tell Shimon to go find someplace else to live. And the Pesukim describe over there various bands of Shevet Shimon went and settled in different other places. In any case, some of them even conquered new territory. Anyway, the point is that, now, in that particular case, since anyway Shimon's territory was carved out from within Yehuda's, then fine, you could say nine cities from the two Shvatim. But you wouldn't say that by any other two Shvatim, where each one has its own contiguous territory, so it's not really a contradiction against Rish Lakish. It's still a question, though. Still, the Pasuk could have specified four and five, respectively. So the Gemara leaves the question open. The Rosh points out, I mean, it seems there doesn't seem to really be a nafka mina la'alocha to it. If you're talking about the original division in Yeshua's times, and as the Gemara elsewhere says, my dehava hava, what's done is done. It's already a done deal. And if you're talking about la'osid lavoi, then when Mashiach comes, then they divide up Eretz Yisrael, then they'll decide how to do things. The Gemara says, here's another question. We said that the people who are madiach, the irani dachas, have to be men. We said not women and children. What about chudchume elehen mahu? What about if the people on their own decided to worship Avodah Zarah? So nobody came and told them, let's worship. They themselves came up with the notion that we should do that. So mahu, what would be the din? So do they become an irani dachas? The question is, vayadichu amarachmana. On the one hand, the Pasuk says they push them off, they convince them, implying, therefore, v'lo shehud chumei aleihem, so that would exclude the case where they were madiach themselves, and therefore they wouldn't become an irani dachas. Oidoma, afilu hud chumei aleihem, or maybe the words vayadichu doesn't mean that it has to be that there are specific people who go and convince them. It's enough that they themselves, that they are convinced, and that's good enough, and that's reason enough to declare them an irani dachas, even if it was nobody particular who did it, and they just came up with the idea on their own. So the Gemara says, Toshma, well, let's bring a proof. We said in the Mishnah and in the Braisa, Hidichur Noshamuktanim, that if women and children are Madiachit, then it doesn't become an Irani Dachas. Now, if you're going to tell me that it's possible for them to become an Irani Dachas on their own, so then I might. Why should they be potter from being an Irani Dachas? Women and children convincing them is not any worse than them convincing themselves. So if you're going to say that if they convince themselves, then they're an Irani Dachas, why should the fact that women and children told them to would change anything? So that would seem to show that no, it really has to be two or more men come and convince them, not women and children, and not themselves either. But the Gemara says that's not really a proof. Hanach bosan afshayo gridi, because you can say when they convinced themselves, then it means that they pulled themselves. They ended up going by themselves. So therefore, you could say that's reason enough to make them an irani dachas. Hani b'vosam noshem uktanim gridi, as opposed to when it comes to women and children, you can say the fact is they weren't convinced by themselves. The ones who convinced them were women and children. So yes, you would say that maybe that's weaker. Maybe, in other words, gzeres hakasov, that if women and children convince them, then therefore we're not going to call them an irani dachas for that. But maybe But maybe if you don't have women and children in the picture, and if they themselves convince themselves, maybe that would be enough to make them an Irani Dahas.
They themselves became the Meshit.
They themselves became the Madichim, basically, right. So Rashi, by the way, brings an interesting point over here, which is the word over here is Gridi with a Dalad. So in fact, you have different places in Shas where it uses the word gorir with two reishes, and it usually means to be pulled and to be schlepped along, but Rashi says that's not actually what it means. The word gorir with two reishes actually means to drag. Here we're talking about gridi with a dalad, and in other places in Shas you would have expressions like that as well. It means, Rashi explains, the same way as you often have the Gemara Loshon Greda, Gimel Reish Yud Dalad Aleph, which means alone. The Gemara will have an expression in various places that greater, which means alone. So that means, in other words, because something that's alone is pulled away from the general category. So Rashi explains like this: in Lashon Kodesh, the Shodesh Gimel Reish Dalad means to scratch. In Aramaic, it means to be unique. So therefore, greedy over here means they become unique. They go and pull themselves into a different category. Meanwhile, goror would mean to drag. Yeah. In any case, the point is that we're saying that, in fact, you could argue that women and children being madiach them is in fact different than they themselves, and therefore that if they themselves do, maybe they are in fact considered an irani das. So the Gemara leaves the question open. The Rambam, in fact, paskins that we judge them like Yechidim, because since the Gemara left the question open, we can't very well judge them by an Irani Dachas, but actually a number of the Noisei Kalim on the Rambam bring up the point, you can understand that Rambam wants to paskin Lakula, therefore he's going to say that they can't become an Irani Dachas as we don't destroy their property, but isn't that a Kula that includes a Chumra, because then it means that we're giving the people Skila instead of Hereg, which is a much harsher punishment. So shouldn't the Rambam say, if he wants to be Lakula completely, he should say, we have to give them Hereg in case they're an Irani Dachas, and we have to not destroy their property in case they're not an Irani Dachas. So the Oruch HaNer discusses this over here, and then discusses it in light of, we had a discussion earlier in the Masechta about the question, Ve'inin Kurok Adichtiv, did you require, when it says certain details in a Pasuk, do we require that the mitzvah takes place exactly as it says in the Pasuk, or if we don't have the ability to do it that way, do we just do however it is? So since over here, the Rambam himself holds in Ve'inin Kurok Adichtiv, as we see other examples, so he says that it's not even a matter of a suffix, it's a vadai that they're not an irani dachas. Well, if it's a vadai that they're not an irani dachas, then no problem giving them skila, because in that case, then for sure there's no possibility that there's an irani dachas, that they are an irani dachas. Okay. The Gemara goes on. The Mishnah had said ad shi yudach ruba. We said only if the majority of the city has been convinced to worship Avodah Zarah, only then does it become an irani dachas. So the question is Hefi Abdinim. How exactly do we do that? Now we said you need Roiv, and we also said you need Edim Vahasra for each one of them. So it actually makes a point, by the way, on the previous part when we're saying about women and children versus themselves. In other words, the idea would be like this. If women and children convince them, you could say they're not so oduk, they're not so fanatic about worshiping Avodah Zarah. Sachakol, it's only women and children who convince them, so maybe therefore they're not so fanatical about it right now, or maybe they went one time and worshiped Avodah Zarah. It doesn't mean that they're incorrigible, whereas if they themselves did, then maybe it means that they are. But then again, the Gemara has left the question open, and then Amman Paskins, they're not an Irani Dachas in that case. Okay, so Adhi Yudachura, Behechi Abdinan, so how exactly do we make, if you need Eidim Vahasra for everyone, then how do you wind up, what do? You can't judge them all at once, because each one you need Eidim Vahasra, and they need to be judged and based in. So how do we do it exactly? Amar Rav Yehuda, donin v'choivshin, donin v'choivshin. So Rav Yehuda says, each person that we find worshipped Avodah Zarah, we have a separate din Torah for them. So we decide, in other words, here, you, Reuven, we have Edim v'Asra that you worshipped Avodah Zarah. Therefore, now we're going to put you, we don't know yet whether you're part of the majority. Therefore, right now you're Chayev Skila. But we don't know yet. That may change. You may be Chayev Hereg, depending on if we find the majority of the city. Therefore, we're going to put Reuven in jail temporarily. Levi in a holding cell, and then we're going to judge Shimon, and then we're going to judge Levi, and so on and so forth, going through the people of the city. And once we have, then when we come to the end, when we've gone through all the people in the city, then we're going to see a majority of them guilty or not. That's what Rehoda says, done in v'choyvshin. We judge each one, we put him in jail, then we judge the next one, put him in jail, and so forth, and then we see, and then we see at the end what's going to happen with them, whether skila or hereg. And then Rashi says, actually, what happens is, if we find that they are a majority, then fine, then we'll need to judge them we'll need to have a separate din Torah to judge them all collectively and to give them hereg and decide that their property has to be destroyed. So the Gemara says, Omalei Ula, but Ula says to Rabbi Yehuda, Nimsa Atama Anes Dinin Shalelu. Then it's coming out that you're delaying the punishment of the first ones. And as we learned earlier in the Masechta, you don't do that. When you have, once a person has been judged by Beis Din and condemned to death, then you're supposed to carry out the sentence as soon as possible. So what are you doing? You're going to have Reuven you judge today, and Shimon you're going to judge tomorrow, and so forth. And then by the time you get through the city, Reuven is waiting around a long time. Ella, Oma Ula, done in v'sotlin. Rather, Ula says, what we do is, each one, as we judge him, and we find Einim v'asra, then we give him skila right away. So far, we treat him as a yochid. After most of the people of the city have been, after we've gone through the people of the city, now we see, so we go up to half the city that way. So let's say the city has 100 people in it, which is the minimum size it needs to be. So you, if so far Beis Din finds that 50 of them, so far Beis Din has gotten to the 50th one, they find he worshipped Avodah Zarah, so they give him skila. Now when they bring the 51st person to Beis Din, if they find that he worshipped Avodah Zarah as well, then already it shows Lamafreya, it shows retroactively. We had a majority, so therefore from now on we're going to give the rest of them Sayif, and we're going to destroy their property. At this point, we can't say the 51st or 52nd or whatever that we should give them the harsher punishment of skila, because at this point we find already that the city is majority worshipped of Nizarda and therefore is an Irani Dachas. Now Rashi mentions also the point, mamoinam ovad, their money is lost, which implies that according to Rashi, what we do is now, meanwhile, we had judged the first 50 and we had already executed them. At that point, we hadn't yet destroyed their property because we didn't know whether it was going to be an Eir Nidachas, but now that we find retroactively that they were, then we're going to go and destroy their property now because we're going to go burn the city and destroy all their property because now it turns out it was an Eir Nidachas after all. So, on the other hand, the Chazon Ish brings that maybe not, actually. Maybe the ones who were already given skila, then the fact is that they were given skila, they were not treated at the time as an Irani Dachas, so therefore maybe we don't destroy their money. Any ones who are judged after that, the 51st, the 52nd, etc., their property gets destroyed. Although he says that would also mean, well, only when there's a suffix, whether they still worship Avodah Zarah. After the warning, if there's a suffix, then he says, then you don't give him skila at all, then indeed we would have to delay their judgment, even though that means in the Adin, because the fact is there's a suffix. So that's Ula's explanation. So the Gemara says Itmar, so we have a discussion further on that topic. Rabbi Yochanan Amar done in v'soklin. Rabbi Yochanan says, like Ula had just said, that you judge each one individually and give him skila and then the next one and continue until you have the majority of the city, and then after that, any ones after that get killed by the sword. But Resh Lakish Amar Marbilahen Batidinim. Resh Lakish gives a different answer, which is that to begin with, you don't have one, like this, we were assuming all this time, you have one base in judging them one after the other. And the problem is, as it said earlier in the Masechta, you can't have one Dastin judge two different people on one day unless the Avera was the same and the punishment is the same. And here it's not necessarily going to be, because, for example, there were different types of Avodah Zarah that they could have worshipped. So therefore, the Shlokesh says, to begin with, you set up many individual Bote Dinim all around town, and this way you can judge all the people on the same day. Rashi also points out, practically speaking, actually Rashi says it's not because ain't done in Beis Din in B'yom Echad, because we said that when it's one Misa and one Avera, then we could, and here it's all the Avera of Avodah Zarah, and it's all the same punishment. No, it's because practically speaking, if you need to interrogate the Edim for every one, you're not going to finish the whole thing on one day. Therefore, the Shlokher says, set up many different individual Bote Dinim, and that way they can deal with the whole matter on one day, and that way in one day we'll know whether in fact it was majority worship of Avodah Zarah, and then they get Sayif, and then it's an a nidachas, or if it was not, then they're getting skila. So you do it that way. In fact, the Be'er Sheva points out the Shlokish has very good reason to disagree with Rabbi Yochanan, because according to Rabbi Yochanan and Ola, it comes out you're never going to have that hakei sakeis kol yoshvei yirahil fichara as yoshvei or yirahil fichara. You're never going to have that all the people who worship Rabbi Dezara are going to get hereg. This is according to him, up to half the city you're going to end up giving them skila. Therefore, the Shlokish wants to fulfill the positive the way it says, and therefore that would require that we have many bate dinim in the first place. So the Gemara says, Eini, but is that so? Can you have individual bote dinim be judging the people of an irani dachas? The pasuk says, the pasuk says that if you find a person worshipped Rabbi Dezara, you take out that man or that woman and you give them skila, implying ish v'isha atamotzi v'sharecha, and the expression of the pasuk is you take them out to sharecha, meaning your local based in, because they would usually sit by the gate of the city. So we learn from that the fact that it says ha'ishahi, or yes, ha'ishahi, ish v'isha atamotzi v'sharecha, only an individual man or woman you can bring out to your gate, see your individual bote dinim of 23 who sit in every city, v'yatamotzi, call it your kolo, l'sharecha. But to judge an entire city, you don't bring them l'sharecha, you have to dafka bring them to the beis din agadol in Yerushalayim. So how is your shlokish saying that you do an individual beis din for every person? It comes out then that you're sentencing, you're having a beis din of 23, sentence an ir nidachas, and you can't. It has to be a beis din of 71 dafka. Now, in fact, the Be'er Sheva also adds, you know, in the beginning of the Masechta, we had that point. It said quite clearly that to declare it an Irani Dachas, you need the Beis Din Shal Shiv Be'echad. The Gemara preferred to ask from Rabbi Chama because he brings the actual source in the Pasuk for this concept. So the answer is like this. What Shlokish means is Marbin Lahan Botidinin. Yes, we set up many individual Botidinin, or Ma'ainin Bidinehan, but those individual Botidinin, they don't actually deliver the verdict, this is now an Irani Dachas, because they can't do that. They don't have jurisdiction to do that. So Ma'ainin Bidinehan, they look into the din, they see, in other words, is it a majority or is it not a majority? And then, if we find that it was a majority, umaskin and lahu, the based in agadol, then we take that whole majority and bring them to the based in agadol in Yerushalayim, the gamri lahu the dinayu, and that the based in agadol will be the ones who give the verdict, because they're the only ones who have the authority to declare a city, and irani dachas, the kafi lahu, and then they execute them then. The Adramah also adds they can't just rely on the findings of the lower Batidinim. They do have to judge them again, but the point is this way they don't have to go through the whole rigmarole of cross-examining all the Edim, where again it would be impossible for them to be able to get through all of that in one day. So like this, they take the information provided to them by the lower Batidinim, and they check further into it to make sure that it really does meet all the other criteria of the Irani Dachas. The Rambam, in fact, paskens that way. Usually we have a rule when we have a machlokas, Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish. Usually a halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan, but over here, the Rambam paskens like Rish Lakish, that we do that, we have separate bote dinim to judge every individual, and then we take them to the beis din agadol, etc. So the Ramah actually asks, Yad Ramah asks on it actually, well then why? I mean, the usual rule is the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan. So first the Kesef Mishnah actually on the Rambam brings an explanation that the Rambam did not have a girsa that you had Rabbi Yochanan over here. He just has, there was Rabbi Yehuda, there was Ula, and there was Rish Lakish. Well then fine, the halacha can be like Rish Lakish against them. The Aruch HaNer goes and discusses and says that no, there's reason to pass them like Rabbi Yochanan, Rish Lakish, even in this particular case, even against Rabbi Yochanan, and he explains why that would be based on this drasha that you can't bring the whole city l'sharecha. So. The Gemara goes on. The Mishnah had said hake sake for gomer. The hake sake is yoshva ir v'chola. The Mishnah had said you should strike and kill the inhabitants of the city. And the Mishnah had gone on to describe a case where you had a caravan of donkey drivers that's passing through from one place to another. So we said if they're located in the city and they don't go along with the Avodah Zarah, and as Rashi had said in the Mishnah, the likelihood is they won't because they're not the locals and therefore they're not as act to be drawn after people, what people in town do, then therefore they can save the city in the sense that now we count the population of the city and we see they count towards the good people in the city and they might therefore help to make up the majority that saves the city from being at Nirani Dahas. So the Gemara brings, Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa, a caravan of donkeys or of camels, and with their drivers, that's passing through from one place to another. So now, the Mishnah talked about the case where they don't go along with the Avodah Zarah and they help save it. Here, the Braisa is going to deal with the other way around, if they do end up getting convinced to worship Avodah Zarah together with the people of the city. So then it depends. So they stayed there overnight, and they were hudach together with the people of the city. So then it depends. Im nishtahu sham lamed yoim, if they stayed there for 30 days, then they're considered like the people of the city, hein v'sayeh from amon and avad. Then they're treated like the rest of the guilty people of the Irani Dachas. They get sayeh, and their property is destroyed. Even though they were planning to leave afterwards, and they don't even live here, but 30 days is enough for them to be considered people of the city. Pachas mikan, if they're any less than that, then they don't count towards the majority. But on the other hand, since they were guilty, we can't count them towards the innocent either. Hein b'skila u'mamon and polat, they themselves get skila, and their money is saved, meaning, in other words, they're counted like yechidim. So in other words, the point is, even though they did go along, Aruch HaNer explains, the Chiddush is, even though they did go along with the Avodah Zarah, nevertheless, since they were there less than 30 days, and they don't count towards the majority to make it an Irani Dachas. So the Gemara says, Rumini, I have a contradiction, though. A Mishnah says in Bava Basra, Kama yir be'ir v'yir ka'anshe ir, when a person is in a city and there are various kinds of taxes that he has to pay towards the upkeep of the city, towards hiring guards for the city, and various other things that are needed for the city to function. So the Mishnah says, Kama yir be'ir, how long does a person have to live in the city? V'yir ka'anshe ir, and he's considered like the people of the city for that purpose. Shnei Mos HaChodesh, 12 months. So why over there? Is it 12 months? And here we're saying only 30 days. The answer is Amar Rava, like Kasha, Hola Mevi Bimnei Mosa, Hola Mevi Mi Yosvei Mosa. Because of the difference. That Mishnah over there in that Mishnah over there in Bava Basra is talking about how long it takes them to be considered a person of the city. For that, it takes 12 months. Whereas in our case over here, we're dealing with how long it takes him to be one of the residents of the city. Now, in the Pasuk, it says, Hakesakes Yoshvei Ha'ir Ahilafi Charev. So once he's considered Yoshvei Ha'ir, then already he can be counted, then already he can be counted as part of the Irani Dachas. So therefore, that's what we're saying, that if he was there for 30 days, then already he's part of Yoshvei Ha'ir, even though he's not considered part of Bnei Masa, he's not part of the people of the city, as far as paying the city taxes and all that, but he is considered already Yoshvei Ha'ir to the extent where now he can be part of the Irani Dachas.
What's the difference?
The difference is that Yoshvei just means people who reside in the city, even if they're not of that. Even if they're not of that city. To be there 12 months already makes them Bnei Ha'ir, then already it makes them a person of the city.
There's a lower bar
to be Yoshvei Ha'ir than there is to be Bnei Ha'ir, right? And the Gemara says, Vaha Tanya, and indeed we learn in a Braisa there is that distinction. Hamudr Hana mi Bnei Ha'ir, when a person makes a neder not to have Hana from any of the Bnei Ha'ir, and always when it comes to Nedarim is where we're going to find definitions of what is and isn't included. Im yesh adam shenishtar sham shnei masa chodesh. If you have a person who stayed in town 12 months, then also lahonis mimenu, then you're not allowed to have hana from him, because he's included in Bnei Ha'ir. Pachas mikan, mutal lahonis mimenu. If he's less than that, then you're allowed to have hana from him. On the other hand, mi yoshvei ha'ir, but if he made a neder not to benefit from the people who dwell in the city, then im nishtar shloshim yoim, also lahonis mimenu, pachas mikan, mutal lahonis mimenu, then the cutoff would be 30 days. So we see you have the same distinction between Bnei Ha'ir, the people of the city, versus Yoshvei Ha'ir, the people who just live in the city. So to live in the city, it's enough 30 days. To be of the city means 12 months. Okay. The Mishnah said, Hachrem Oisav Es Cholash HaBachol, that you have to destroy the city and everything that's in it. And the Mishnah had gone on to say that there's a difference in this regard between the Nichsei Tzadikim, We said the property of tzaddikim for this purpose means the ones who didn't worship Avodah Zarah, so their own property that's in the city is still destroyed, as the Gemara is going to point out soon why. But the difference is that the nichse tzaddikim that's outside of the city do not have to be brought into the city to be destroyed, to be burnt. They stay outside the city. They don't get destroyed, and later on they can go and reclaim them themselves, and if they die it goes to their yoshim, etc. As opposed to, the Mishnah had said, the nechosim of the Rishon, the ones who did worship Avodah Zarah, then even whatever's outside the city also has to be destroyed. So the Gemara says, Hachrim Oisav es kol asher ba, when the pasuk says destroy it and everything that's in it. So when it says Oisav is a miut, it, that means pratan nichsa tzedikim shebechutzala, that means to exclude the property of the tzedikim that is outside the city. So you don't have to bring that in, you don't have to bring that into that into the city. So nechosim in that city itself, they have to get destroyed, but not anything that's outside. When it says the eskol asher ba, when it says and everything that's in it, that means v'rabas nichtze tzedikim shabesoicha. That means we do include the property of the tzedikim that's in the city. That does have to be destroyed. When the pasuk says shlolah, the pasuk says you have to destroy all the spoils of the city. Shlolah again is a miut, meaning its spoils. That means, as we learned in the Mishnah, v'lo shlal shamayim, not property that belongs to Hashem. As we learned in the Mishnah about hektish and truma and so on and so forth, that those have different rules. When the pasuk says ve'es kol shlolah, when it says and all of its spoils, which is a ribui, that means v'rabas nichsi rishoyim shechotzala, that comes to include the property of the rishoyim, which is outside the city, that has to be brought into the city and added to the fire as well. And the Braita continues, Omrav Shimon, Ma Omra Torah Nichse Tzedikim Shabasecha Yoivdu. Why indeed does the Torah say that the property of the Tzedikim that's in town gets destroyed? Meaning, in other words, if the tzaddikim themselves we're not executing them, they didn't worship Avodah Zarah, why are we destroying their property? So Rav Shimon says, because me gorem lahem shiyaduru b'soicha, what is it that caused the tzaddikim to live in this place in the first place? Mamoinam is because of their property, that they had property in the city and they didn't want to lose it. Lefichach mamoinam ova, therefore their money has to be destroyed. So when we find something similar by Lloyd. Why did he go and settle in Stein? Was one reason was because of the wealth and all that was there, and he wanted to live there, and the result was he lost all his wealth when Stein was destroyed. He had to leave it all behind.
He wanted to delay
in order to get all of it, and the Malachim tell him hurry up, and he ended up losing all his property that he had originally come to Stein in order to amass. Yeah. Now Rashi points out that, again, like we said before, Rav Shimon Dorish Taima Dekra, Rav Shimon always wants to look for the reason behind the mitzvah. So in other words, not necessarily according to him is there an actual nafkamina in this din. He's just saying that you want to know why the Torah is giving you such a seemingly strange halacha. I'll explain to you why. The Orach HaNer discusses that there may be a difference, there may be an actual nafka min ala halacha in it. We just talked about this caravan of camel drivers or donkey drivers or whatever, how long they have to be in town. According to Reb Shimon, you could say if they didn't stay there for 30 days, then therefore they're not Yoshvei Ha'ir. Even yet we said you need to be 30 days to be Yoshvei Ha'ir, and therefore their property is not going to be destroyed. But even if we don't say Darshin and Taima Dekra, you're also going to have, what if there's property of other people from a different city that's located in the city? Would we destroy it or not? Based on Reb Shimon's reason, you would have to say a reason not to. You would have to say not to, because the people who own that property obviously didn't live in town, whereas according to the Chachamim, you might say that doesn't apply and you do in fact have to destroy it. Next, the Gemara says, Omamar. So let's analyze this braisa. We said the eskol shlala tikbots l'rabbis nichse rishoyim shabachotzla. We said that it includes all the property of the rishoyim outside the city has to be brought into the city and burnt. Amar Rav Chista over nikbotzim l'soicha. So Rav Chista says that would be specifically where it can be gathered into the city. So that would mean, in other words, only where it's, Rashi explains, only where it's nearby, such that you could go and gather it up and bring it on that same day to the city, so that when you're burning it, you can burn it together with them. But what if he has property that's a few days, what if he has things that are a few days journey away, they're not going to get there that fast, then we don't have to destroy it anyway. Rashi also adds that it has to be that this property at one time was in the city, and now he was mafkid it by somebody else. So now, therefore, we're saying we have to return it to the city. But if it was never in the city in the first place, for example, they inherited it from a relative who lived elsewhere, then Rashi says you wouldn't have to bring it into the city in the first place. Mefarshim discuss, actually, is this all one long explanation of Rashi? Meaning, according to Rashi, it would have to be both. That it was at one time in the city, and that it's within a day's trip of the city where they can bring it back, or is it one or the other? Is it actually giving two different explanations of what it means b'nikbots and l'secha? The Turma Sadeshin discusses this, and Marshal discusses this, and other Mephoshim discuss Marshal brings a girsa over here that Rashi is giving two different explanations of what it means. All right. The Gemara continues. The Gemara continues. Omer of Chista, Pekdonis shall anshe Iranidachas mutorin. But a pekodin of the people of the Iranidachas, says Rav Chista, would remain mutter, and you don't have to destroy it together with the city. So the Gemara says, Hey Chidomi, what do we mean? Do we mean that something from a different city deposited with a person from the Irani Dachas for safekeeping, and now the city has been declared an Irani Dachas, and that Pekodin is located in the city? Of course you don't have to destroy it. Obviously it would be Mutter. Lav Shlolahu. It's not part of the spoils of the city. It doesn't belong to the city. It belongs to this other fellow who lives out of town. And he didn't worship Abu Dazara. Why should it have to be destroyed? Does Rav Chista mean the other way around, where it belongs to a person of the Irani Dachas, and he deposited it for safekeeping with somebody else out of town? Well then, you have to ask, when, why is he saying as a blanket statement that it's potter from being destroyed? If you're able to gather it in, according to the different explanations that we just said of Rashi, amai mutarin, then why should it be mutter? It should have to be brought in and destroyed. If it can't be brought in, either it's too far away, or it was never in the city in the first place, or if we say that it was one long explanation in Rashi, then it's one or the other. Then Rav Chista already said this din, and why is he repeating himself? And the answer is, la'olam de'ir acheres samafkidi b'seicha. We are, in fact, talking about it belongs to somebody from another town, and it's located here in the city. You're going to say, in that case, what's the chiddush? Of course, it's not shlala, so why should he have to burn it? Because we're talking about over here, where the person in the Irani Dachas had accepted achrayus on it. So he had said that if this pikodin is lost or damaged or what have you, then I will reimburse you for it. So mal detamer, so you would think, given the kabbalah le achrayus to the day dummy, once he accepts achrayus on it, it might be considered like it's his. And we do, in fact, have, in connection with the halachas of chametz on Pesach, for example, if such a thing comes up, where a person has in his possession chametz that belongs to a goy, but he took achrayus on it, then it's considered his for the purpose of bal yirah bal yimaltzah. So you would think the same thing over here. Kamash v'lam, therefore, Rav Chista tells us that no, in this case, the fact that he took achrayus on it doesn't matter, and nevertheless it is, it's not considered his. The Orach HaNer points out that in the case of chometz, you actually have a pasuk that you have a machlokas. First of all, something called dover agurim l'mamon, k'mamon dummy or not. When you have something which it itself is not a monetary thing, but it can lead to a monetary thing, namely the chometz itself is not something that has a monetary value because it becomes osur on Pesach. But the point is, if it gets lost, the yid is going to have to pay money to the goy. So therefore, it's considered dover agurim l'mamon, and you have machlokas elsewhere in Shas about whether that's considered mamon or not. But the fact is, by chometz you have a posik, lo yiroh and lo yimotze, whereas over here you don't have such a posik. So therefore it's not something that it is. The Gemara brings further in this connection, Omer of Chista, behema chetzia shel irani dachas, v'chetzia shel iracheres. If you have an animal in the irani dachas, which half of the animal belongs to a person who lives in the irani dachas, one of the Rishoyim, or one of the Tzadikim for that matter, because their property is also destroyed, and the other one belongs to somebody in another, and the other half belongs to somebody in another town, asura, so the whole thing becomes osur. But Isa, chetzi shol irani dachas vechetzi shol iracheres. But if you had a batch of dough, which half of it belonged to someone in town and someone out of town, muteres, then that dough would be mutter to eat. My timer, what's the difference? The hema commanded like pligadamia, because an animal cannot be considered as though it was divided up. Rashi points out, you have a concept which the Gemara mentions elsewhere, you want even a kazayis of meat from the animal, you have to shecht the whole thing. So therefore, you can't say that. So now, if you shechted it, no good, because the animal is not supposed to be given shechita. The animal is supposed to be put to death, like everything else in the Irani Dachas. So therefore, so even if he shechted it, then it still would be osa b'hanah. So now, the point is, in other words, when he shechts this animal, the part of it that's osa b'hanah, by virtue of belonging to the people of the Irani Dachas, that makes it the whole thing, therefore, is osa, and every part of it, once you shecht it, which you're osa to do, then every part of it is osa to eat. So therefore, the result is that even the fact that half of it belongs to somebody from out of town doesn't help us. On the other hand, with a dough, Isa, commanded pligadamia, a batch of dough, you could divide up. One part doesn't depend on the other. So therefore, see, you would divide up. You would say that one part of it belongs to the Irani Dachas, the other part does not, and therefore that part would remain mutter. The Rabbi Akiva Eger and Gilian Ashas over here refers to a Shagas Arya that discusses this point. The Shagas Arya says on the face of it, this would only work according to the opinion that Yesh Breira, that when we have something that's divided up, we consider retroactively as though this division is how it was supposed to be all along in the first place. If we say Ein Breira, and in things Daraisa, the halachas, we say Ein Breira, how would that work? You say now you're splitting up this dough, and half of it belongs to the Irani Dachas, and half of it not. But what about that doesn't mean that all this time was like that. You could very well say that this part that now you're assigning to the person outside of town, in fact, part of it belonged to the person of the Irani Dachas. How can you trade like that? So of course, so he questions how would this work if we say Ein Breira? So in fact, he leaves a tzorach iyun on the Rambam, who says Ein Breira, and still says that the dough would be mutter over here. So different achronim talk about possibilities over here. The Rav Shimon Shkok gives an answer, because a dough to begin with is meant to be divided up into smaller batches, so therefore, so to begin with, it means that they meant to divide it up. So it's not just now what we're doing is, we're saying this part belongs to you, this part belongs to me, but even if we say Ein Breira, that would work over here, because even until now, neither of them had a kinyan on the entire thing, so therefore, so it's not a matter of trading it. That's how Rav Shimon Shkop explains this in Shara Yosher. A different answer also is the Makor Chaim brings an answer that when does it become also by an Irani Dachas? Only Gmar Din is only when they give the verdict. Well, at that point, then Beis Din can make a tenai that the Gmar Din should affect only the part of the Irani Dachas. So again, by an animal it wouldn't work, because you have to shech the entire animal, but by a doe it can work. Okay. The Gemara continues. Boy Rav Chista has a question. Behemas Irani Dachas, an animal that belongs to a person in Irani Dachas, maut tishani boshchita latanim in denevela. Now we said you can't shecht it and eat it. That for sure. It's also to eat. It's also b'ana. But would shchita at least help that now if this animal is shechted, then it's not matame tumas nevela? Where if a person touches or carries it, he'd become tamei. The question is, lefi cherev amar Rachmana. On the one hand, the Torah is telling you that you have to kill it by the edge of the sword. So that means, in other words, loishna shochta mishchat loishna kotla mikdal. So it doesn't matter whether you shecht it or whether you kill it. Either way, it's going to be still considered nevela. Or dilma kiven the shachta mahani lo shchita. Or the fact is, you did shecht it. Maybe the shchita is effective to the extent that now we can say that it's not matame anymore. Mai, so what's the question? And the Gemara says, Teiku, we have to leave the question unresolved. We don't know. Okay. The Gemara says, Boi Rabbi Yosef. Now Rabbi Yosef has another question. Seir noshim sitkonius mahu. What about the hair belonging to the noshim sitkonius, the women in town who did not worship Avodah Zarah? Is their hair, does their hair have to be burnt as well as part of the property of the Irani Dachas or not? Omar Rava, so Rava says, the fact that you're asking about the hair of the Sitkonius, or Chodirish Oyes Osir, are you implying that the hair that's on the head of the Rishoyes does have to be burnt? Why should it be Osir? Tikvah is v'saraf d'ksiv. The pasuk says you should gather together and you should burn. From which we learn, misha'in mechusar al kvitza usreifa. Therefore, the din of burning the property of the Ir Nidachas applies only to things that all you need to do is gather them together and then burn them. Yotzazeh, as opposed to the hair, shemuchoset slisho kvitzo usreifa. Here you would need to do three things in order to burn it. You would need to cut it off their heads, then you would need to gather it together, and then you would need to burn it. And we often find, when the pasuk says like that, we find other places in the Gemara where it has drushes like that, where it says a couple, where it says two verbs about something that we mean. It has to be only those two things need to be done, and nothing else. We have it, for example, in connection with a get, where since it says v'chosav v'nosan, he writes and he gives, implies that there can't be anything else in between. Therefore, you can't write a get on a tree attached to the ground, for example. So the same thing over here. Why should the hair, even of the rishoyis, the osavana, when you would have to do something else in order to gather it and then burn it? And the pasuk is implying that you don't. Elo Amar Rava. So Rava says no. The question is not about the hair of their natural hair of their head, but peya nachris. Rav Yosef's question would be about a wig that a woman wears. So then the question would be, now, the wigs belong to the Rishoyis, of course, their property has to be burned. The question is, what about the Tzidkanius? Well, the Gemara says, hey, she dummy, fine, but what's the scenario? Edom chubba begufa, if it's attached to her, if she's wearing the wig now, when the city was declared an Ir Nidachas, kegufa damya, it's attached to her body, so it should be considered like her body, it would be considered like the clothing. Now, the clothing of the tzaddikim in the Ir Nidachas does not get burned. We don't make them leave the town without clothing at all. So therefore, by the same token, then the hair should be in the same category, and we should say that the hair of the tzidkonius doesn't have to be burnt because it's attached to them. So what's the question? And the answer is Lloyd Sirta, the Toli Besivta. Because you're talking about she's not actually wearing the wig right now, it's hanging on a hook in her house. So now, is this wig now considered like the nechosim of tzaddikim in town, where we said that that gets destroyed regardless, because like Reb Shimon had said before, what were you doing living in the city in the first place is because of your mammon. Oduma, given the isle of Anafka, or maybe because every time she's always going to put on this wig whenever she goes outside, so maybe it's considered like her clothing, and just like the clothing that she's wearing doesn't get burnt with the Ir Nidachas, neither does this wig. So again, the Gemara says, there is v'chlal a question when we're saying over here that the nechosim we said before, the nechosim of the tzaddikim are destroyed. Does that include also the clothing on their backs? So in fact, there's a Rashi elsewhere in Shas, in Erchin, it also brings this question about the hair of the Noshim Tzidkonius, and Rashi over there explains that it says the Tzaddikim have to leave Arumim, which sounds like they have to, even the clothes off their backs have to go, because that's still considered part of the property of the Ir Nidachas, but here Rashi is saying that not. So therefore, so the Aruch HaNer says that maybe when Rashi says over there Arumim, doesn't literally mean naked. We find sometimes that the word Arumim, the Chidah points out, the word Arumim doesn't always mean naked, it just means underdressed. So it means, in other words, like they're wearing the minimum amount. So actually, now we said before, Rav Shimon had brought a reason why the property of the tzaddikim is destroyed, because he said because they lived in town and they shouldn't have, and therefore their property gets destroyed. The Minchas Chinuch explains that actually this question of whether their clothing is burnt as well is going to depend on that machlokas of Rav Shimon and the Tanakhama. Rav Shimon would say, listen, a person is going to wear clothes wherever they are. So what do you mean? Because they lived in town, therefore that property should be destroyed. That property, their clothing, would have been on them regardless. Whereas the Chachamim are going to say it doesn't matter how Gzeris HaKosev is that all the property has to be destroyed, which would include the clothing as well. The Gemara goes on. The Mishnah had said, and quoted the pasuk, you have to gather all the spoils of the city into the city square. And you burnt that. And the Mishnah had said, if the city doesn't have a square, then you have to build one. So the Gemara brings Tana Rabbanan. We learn a brayse. Ein lo rechoiv, ein anasis Ir Nidachas. Divrei Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel holds that no, if it doesn't have a rechoiv in the first place, it can't become an Ir Nidachas. Rabbi Akiva Oyma, ein lo rechoiv, oisin lo rechoiv. And Rabbi Akiva says, like we said in the Mishnah, that if it doesn't have a city square, then you make one now. You clear a space and make the city square. What's the underlying machlokas? Mar sover rechoiva meikra mashma. Rabbi Shmuel holds the words rechoiva has to mean the square that existed already. So no square, no Ir Nidachas. Whereas Rabbi Akiva holds it's fine. Rechoyva hashta nami mashma. It's enough that now it's a rechoyva, even though it wasn't before, and therefore that can it can still can be considered an irani dachas on that basis. Okay. We said in the mission of a hekdeshes shabo yipadu chola. We said any hektish that's in the city has to be redeemed, as we talked about in the Mishnah. Rashi holds it's redeemed and it's not destroyed afterwards. The Rambam holds it's redeemed and then destroyed, because the fact is now that it's redeemed, now that it's bought back from hektish, it's not shlal shemayim anymore. So the Gemara says tana rabbanan. We learn in a braisa hoyu b'kodshe kodshe is in parenthesis, and it's not supposed to be there. Hoyu b'kodshim, if there were kodshim in the irani dachas, so it depends what kind of kodshim we're talking about. Kodshim is veach yamusu. If the kodshim that were going to be offered on the mizbeach, olos, hashomos, etc., of the rishoyim in the town. Now Rashi points out, it's true it's not going to be considered the hemta, because it doesn't belong to them, it belongs already to Hektish. But, as the Gemara is going to say in a few lines, zebach rishoyim te'eva, the korban of a rishoyim is considered disgusting, and therefore Hashem doesn't want such korbanos, and therefore we're going to have to, therefore we can't bring these animals as korbanos. So yamusu, we have to leave them to die, which basically means that we lock them up in a room and they eventually die there. Kodshe bedek abayis, if they're kodshim of bedek abayis, which were going to be given to the treasury of the Bais HaMikdash for the repairs of the Bais HaMikdash, yipodu, then we can buy them back from Hektish, and then we can buy them back from Hektish. Whether we're going to have to destroy them then or not is going to be subject to the Machlokas Rashi and the Rambam. Or trumas yirochu, any truma that's found in town will have to be left to rot. Or maiser sheni, the kisra kodesh yigonzu, any maiser sheni or any kisra kodesh that are in town will have to be put in gniza. They're going to have to be buried. As we talked about in the Mishnah, the Aruch HaNer had given an explanation why we don't say by Ma'aseh Sheni Yerokvu, is because Ma'aseh Sheni can include money of Ma'aseh Sheni, where you it's not going to be able to decay, therefore we have no choice but to bury it out of sight. The Mishnah continues, the Braisa continues, Reb Shimon Omer Behemta, Reb Shimon says, when it says in the Pasuk Behemta, it's animals, and that's a miut, it's animals, meaning not something else, means Veloy Behemoth Bechor Meiser, means not if there are animals of Bechor Meiser in town, then those don't have to be destroyed. And similarly, he says Shlola, when it says it's spoils, meaning Prat Lekesef Hektish Lekesef Meiser, means as opposed to money of Hektish and money of Meiser Sheni, that you don't have to destroy them. So let's analyze the braisa. Omer mar hoyba kodshim is veach yamusu. We said if there are kodshim over there, if their kodshim is veach, animals that were going to be offered on them is veach yamusu, they have to be left to die. So v'amai yamusu. Why should we? Granted, we can't bring them as korbanos because they belong to the rishoyim. But why don't we say like the usual rule when an animal is disqualified as a korban, yiru ad sheyistavu, leave it to graze until it develops a mum, v'yimachru, then we sell them, v'yiplu l'meim l'nedava, and then we'll take the value of it and put it in the nedava boxes in the Bais HaMikdash, which are meant to use to buy kayitz amizbeach. Eventually, when they have times in the Bais HaMikdash when it's a slow season and korbanos are not being brought, then they would have a special fund for kayitz and mizbeach, for korbanos to be brought at that time to keep the kohenim busy and to keep the mizbeach full. So why don't we do that? So the answer is so Rabbi Yochanan Amar zevach rishoyim te'eva. Rabbi Yochanan says because since as the pasuk says the korban of the rishoyim is disgusting, that means we don't even want that the value of it should go onto the mizbeach. So yes, you could leave them to graze, etc. But nevertheless, we still don't want to bring them as a korban. So now again, that applies to the rishoyim. The tzaddikim is different because again, the tzaddikim their property has to be destroyed. But here it's not their property, and we're not going to send them zevach rishoyim te'eva. The Meiri actually brings two different opinions about that. The fact is, they did live in the Irani Dachas, and we said their property is being destroyed. Maybe Rabbi Yochanan would hold that even the animals of kodshim of the tzaddikim can't be brought. So that's one answer. Rish Lakish Amar, Mamon Bailam Hu. Rish Lakish gives a different answer. We're actually talking about kodshim, which are considered the property of the owner. B'hocha b'kodshim shechai bach riosan. Because we're talking about over here kodshim, where he's responsible if the kodshim are lost or stolen or become a balmum or whatever, that he's obligated to bring another one. Then we're talking about the fact that's when we're saying that he would. That's when we're saying that it's considered his property to the extent where now it has to be, where now we can't be poydeit, and therefore we have to leave it to die. Because again, it's considered his property, and as his property, it has to be destroyed. Namely, in other words, we have the general difference between whether a person says neder or nedava. When a person says about an oila, for example, he says harei olai, I obligated myself to bring a carbon, then he's obligated, and even afterwards he designates a particular animal for it. If that animal becomes unavailable, he has to bring another one, as opposed to if he had said to begin with harei zeh carbon, then if it dies or whatever, he doesn't have to replace it. So that would be kodshim she'en chai bachrusan. And then you also have, for example, a chatas or an osham, he's chai bachrusan regardless. He designates an animal for a chatas because he broke Shabbos or ate chaylev or what have you, and now the animal is lost, he's going to have to designate another animal for it to be yotze. So in all those cases, it's chayev bachriyosan. And Rosh Lakish has Reb Shimon, he, therefore, our Mishnah would specifically go according to Reb Shimon, Dama Mamun Bailam. Reb Shimon holds that Kodshim, Shechayev bachriyosan, are considered the Mamun of the owner. So therefore, so as far as the Erin Edachas is concerned, it's considered Mamun Bailam, and therefore it has to be destroyed like all the other animals in town. And therefore, even the money of it is going to be, even the value of it is going to be also b'hana. So the only reason, Rashi says, the only reason why in that case, according to the Shlokish, that the Braisa would say Yamusu, is just because of covered of Hashem, if they are after all Kodshim. So we don't want to kill them outright, but we're going to still lock them up. So the Gemara says, how could you say the Braisa is like Reb Shimon? Hobbit is safer Reb Shimon, he, but the Braisa continues with an opinion of Reb Shimon and says, Behemta, Veloy, Behemus, Behoda, Meiser, etc. So that means Reisha Lav Reb Shimon. That means the Reisha is not like Reb Shimon. So fine, you're right. We can't say that the first part of the Braisa is like Reb Shimon. Ela b'kodshim kalim v'alibidir of Yosef Glivi. Rather, the Shlokish will answer that the Reisha of the Braisa that says kodshim is ve'ach yomusu is talking about, and that means we can't even use the value of them for korbanos, for other korbanos, is because we're talking about, saying that the first part of the Braisa is according to Reb Yosef Glivi, and it's talking about kodshim kalim. The Omar Reb Yosef Glivi says in a Gemara in Bava Kama, kodshim kalim mamun bailim, he considers that kodshim kalim belong to the owner, because since in the end the owner was going to eat most of the meat of kodshim kalim, then Reb Yosef Glivi considers that they belong to the owner in the first place. Well, again, if they belong to the owner, they're also b'hana. And therefore, you can't even exchange them for money, because the money would also be also b'hana. So the Gemara says, Avo kodshim, kodshim mayi podu. So if you're going to tell me the Braisa is talking about kodshim kalim, so you'd be telling me kodshim then, which according to Reb Yosef Glivi are not considered his mammon, then you would say you could redeem them. Then in that case, why is the Braisa phrased the way it is? Adatoni sefer b'med kodshim b'dekabayisi podu. When the Braisa continues and says what you do instead with kodshim b'dekabayis, that those you can redeem, implying, in other words, that the first part of the Mishnah of the Braisa is talking about all kinds of kodshim izbeach, kodshim or kodshim kalim. In that case, listelig the listener b'dida. If the Braisa is according to Rabbi Yisag Lili, who draws a distinction between within kodshim izbeach itself, then the Braisa should be making that distinction. But medvar mamur b'kodshim kalim, when does this apply? That you can't redeem them and you can't do anything. You have to just lock them up in a room. Is only by kodshim kalim. Aba kodshim yipodu. But if it was kodshim, where Rabbi Yisag Lili holds that those are not the mammon of the owner, then yipodu, then you could redeem them. So why didn't the Braisa make that distinction? And the answer is, given the ikachatas chamesu balea de la misa azla, because within kodshim, you can't say as a blanket statement that you could be poured to them. Because you have the special case of a chatas whose owner died, and in this case, the owner was executed as one of the people of the Yonidachas. The din is a chatas whose owner died is now, you can't redeem it. Instead, it's one of the five cases of chatas that goes l'misa, where, again, you have to lock it up in a room and eventually it dies over there. It's halacha l'moshe m'sinai, and it's discussed in detail in the Sechta Tmura, that there are five cases like that where a chatas has to be left to die. And you can't offer it, you can't redeem it or anything like that. So the Braisa couldn't say as a blanket statement, all kodshim you could redeem, because among kodshim is a chatas, and you can't, you would have to leave it to die. So therefore the Braisa preferred to say as a blanket statement that all kodshim is ve'ach yamusu, by which we mean all kodshim kalam according to Rabbi Yosef Glivi, and the chatas as well. It's true that other kodshim you would be able to redeem. So the Gemara says, Bishlein, now, so we had the Machlokas Rav Yochanan and Rav Shlokish, how to understand the Braisa. Bishleimer Rav Yochanan and Omer Kir Shlokish, it's easy to understand why Rav Yochanan does not agree with Rav Shlokish, and he would rather say that the Braisa goes according to everybody, not just according to Rav Yosef Glivi, just gives Zevach Rishoyim Ta'eva. Because the fact is, the Pasuk does say that the korban of Rishoyim is disgusting to Hashem, and therefore we can assume that it means all korbanos, we don't want to redeem any of them, we want to leave them all to die. Ela Rish Lakish my time like Amakir Bechanan. But why doesn't Rish Lakish, who's saying that the Braisa is only according to Rabbi Yosef Levi, and that when it says Kodshim is Beach doesn't mean all of them, it means only Kodshim Kalin plus the Chatas. So why is he forced to explain the Braisa that way? So the answer is Amalach Kiyam Minin Zevach L'Shoyim Ta'eva. Rish Lakish is going to answer you. You know when we say Zevach L'Shoyim Ta'eva, and Hanimi L'Heicha De'Isnu Beinai. The korban itself, sure, we can say Zevach L'Shoyim Ta'eva. So I agree, the animal itself can't be brought as a korban. Aval Hocha, but over here you're talking about being poideh, and you leave it to graze until it develops a mum, and then be poideh and use the money for another korban. Given the ishtini, once it's been changed, it's not the original animal. Ishtini, then it's been changed, and there should be nothing wrong with using the money. Therefore, if instead the Braisa is telling us you're Musu, and you don't have that alternative, then it must be the Braisa is talking about only certain kinds of korbanos, namely that it's talking about Kodshim Kalim plus the Chatas. And therefore, there's no choice but you're Musu. But with other ones where we have the alternative, then better we should do that, says Rish Lakish. Okay. Now, we said in the Braisa of Shimon Omer, Behem Techov, like Behemus Bechoru Meiser, that Rav Shimon had said that when it says Behem Ta, actually, is how it says in the Pasuk, its animals belonging to the city, Veloy Behemus Bechoru Meiser, so it means not animals of Bechoru Meiser. So the Moses B'maya Skinan, what are we talking about over here? What's the case with this Bechoru Meiser? Ilema B'tmimin, are we talking about where the Bechoru and the Meiser are Tumim animals, and they themselves can be brought on the Mizbeach? Shlal Shemayim, who will send us in the category of Shlal Shemayim, and we already said that Shlala v'loy Shlal Shemayim, and therefore, so again, we said we can't bring them as a korban maybe because of Zerach Hashoyim Te'eva or whatever, but nevertheless, we still wouldn't have to destroy them together with the city. Ella b'balim mumin, and if they're balim mumin, and now the owners are going to eat them, shlala minu. Well, then it's considered the property of the city. Why shouldn't they be destroyed together with the rest of the city? So why is Rav Shimon saying v'loy behemus b'chorim ma'aser? The answer is Amar Ravina La'olam b'balim mumin. We are in fact talking about the animals of balim mumin. Umishenecha b'toras behemdecha. However, the pasuk is implying that only the kind of animals that are eaten as behemtecha, where they don't have another name to them, when you have a balamum, you still don't have to kill the animals with it, because behemta means where you eat it as a normal animal, as opposed to over here where it has shem levai, and has a secondary name, it's being eaten as a bechor or as a meiser. So then that wouldn't be included. So therefore, elevatoris bechor or meiser, the shlal shemayim ninu, therefore they're considered shlal shemayim, and therefore they don't have to be destroyed with the property of the erni dachas. On the other hand, the fact is the owner has a certain ownership of it, therefore we have to leave them to die. That's Rashi's explanation, is that's a matter of Shein Levi, that it's a matter of a secondary name that's attached to it. The Gemara elsewhere gives an explanation that a Bechor or Meiser are not eaten like a normal behemah. In the sense, a normal behemah, you can weigh the meat, you can sell it by weight, you can sell it in the public butcher shops or whatever, as opposed to the meat of a Bechor or Meiser, even though you, the owner, are allowed to eat it, but you can't treat it disrespectfully like that. You can only sell it by estimate, and you can't have to sell it privately, etc. So therefore, in that sense, it's not being eaten like a regular behemah. The Gemara points out a pligah de Shmuel. Now, this explanation that we just said, that we're talking about where the animal is a balmum, this answer disagrees with Shmuel. Shmuel explains that according to Reb Shimon, everything when Reb Shimon is saying that we're excluding Bechor and Meiser and Kesef Hektish and Kesef Meiser, Shmuel would say that Reb Shimon is saying everything can be redeemed, everything that could be brought as a korban is brought as a korban, and everything that could be redeemed can be redeemed. My comma, what does Shmuel mean by that? Hachakama, kol shakarav k'shutam, anything of Bechor or Meiser which would have been brought as a korban when it was a tam. The nifter k'shur balmum, and instead it's redeemed from hektish when it becomes a balmum. So in other words, there's a regular kodshim kalim. So except for ma'isa behema and b'chor, those you can't redeem. But in other words, a person had an ola or shlomim or what have you. If it develops a mum, then he buys it back from hektish, and then again the money is taken and used to buy another korban. So Shmuel says that the mishlola imit, then Reb Shimon is going to say that's being excluded on the basis of the word shlola, and therefore, it doesn't have to be destroyed. Once it has a mum, and therefore it can be redeemed, so already it's considered shlal shemayim, which would mean, in other words, says Rashi, according to Shmuel's understanding, Reb Shimon is disagreeing with the Tanakhama, and says, who said before, that we said kodshim kalam, mom and bailam, who were again, like Reb Shlokish, had understood the Braisa to be saying, like Reb Yosef Aglivi, that kodshim kalam belonged to the owner, Shmuel is understanding Reb Shimon to say, that no, it means that they because they need to be redeemed from hektish, when they have a mum, therefore they're still considered shlal shemayim now, therefore you can redeem them. When it's something that would be brought as a tam, but it cannot be redeemed when it's a balmum, namely b'chor meiser mi behema nafka, then that we exclude on the basis of the word behemdecha, and we're saying that and we're saying so it's not shlal shemayim, it's not considered the property of Hashem, because even when it's tam, it's still not. Eventually, it's going to be eaten, and you can't redeem it when it has a mum. But nevertheless, it's still considered to be because it's behem techa, implying not bear. So they not those which are not considered behem techa, because they're not behem tal rather, because they don't belong exclusively to you, and they're not eaten like regular meat. So you need a separate meal from that. So therefore, you can't exclude it on the basis of shlala. So in other words, the point is, Shmuel is holding that unlike Ravino, who would explain Rav Shimon and the Braisa to be talking about only Bali Mumin, Shmuel is understanding that we're talking about even when the animals are Tmimim. Even when the animals are Tmimim, nevertheless, Rav Shimon is excluding them from having to be destroyed, whether based on the word behemto, whether based on the word shlala. So, in other words, according to him, if the Bechor Meiser was a Balmum, then we would, in fact, kill them with the other animals of the Irani Dachas. As opposed to, according to Ravina, we said if the animal is a Balmum, then we would, then we would say that's still not Behemta, and therefore we don't destroy it with the rest of the city, with the rest of the animals of the city. So the Ran adds also that, in fact, so why did Rav Shimon mention the word Kesef Hektish? Why did he say Kesef Hektish? Where does that come in over here? So the Ran explains that maybe actually Rav Shimon said that, but he didn't actually, he mentioned that unnecessarily. The Tanakhama had mentioned Kod Shebedek Abayisi Podu, and Rav Shimon therefore mentions Kesef Hektish for contrast, but really he means Kesef of Meiser. The din of money of Meiser Sheni would be the same din as the din of money of Hektish. That it's not shlala, it's shlal shemayim, even though you can use that to buy food in Yerushalayim. Nevertheless, it's considered Hashem's property, not yours, and therefore, according to the Shimon, it doesn't get destroyed with the rest of the Irani Dachas. So we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem, we'll continue discussing this matter of Truma and Maaseh Sheni and all of that, and the rest of the details about the Irani Dachas, and finish the Masechta, Beis Hashem.
Yes, Shekayach.